Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Today's guest is Christina Gravina, the CEO and founder of Bridging Independent Living Together Incorporated. Christina has been working in the human service field for the past 12 years and has gained extensive experience with promoting independence in individuals' lives despite interfering behaviors. Christina is currently a board-certified behavior analyst with a master's in education and curriculum and design and applied behavior analysis. She has worked as a direct care staff, residential group home manager, residential area director, and a behaviorist overseeing individuals ranging from adolescents to adults in clinical and in-home settings. Christina, thanks for being here.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Please share more with our audience about you and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So BILT is a nonprofit organization. So we work with individuals starting at age 4 all throughout their life. We do applied behavior analysis therapy. So that's where we are looking to sort of teach skills and change challenging behavior people might have. We also work a lot with adults and giving them job opportunities, having some social recreational events. So like last weekend, they went to a Taylor Swift candlelight concert in the city and had dinner. And so we're all about promoting independent living skills, but also having fun while we're doing it.
I love that. And talking about you specifically in this field, what inspired you or encouraged you to pursue human service as your career path?
So I had worked at actually a summer camp as one of my first jobs for kids with special needs. And then I got involved in the adult program. In my first year there, we decided to put on a play. And I just thought it was the most fun I've ever had putting on this sort of play. So from there, it really piqued my interest. And then I just never really went into another sort of job from that time.
Yeah. And what was that almost like aha moment that made you realize that you wanted to start your own organization, kind of going from perhaps working for other companies or other organizations to now having your own nonprofit?
Well, I am very particular with how I want things done and how I expect people with disabilities to be treated. I also am someone that I really strongly believe that people with disabilities should have all the opportunities that anybody else would. And a lot of the companies I had worked for, I felt that a lot of the people sort of at the top did not understand at all what was going on in the direct care level. I felt the individuals were not having enough experiences that they could have. And it's hard because there's staffing constraints and budget constraints and things like that. But I just thought that if I could do my own thing, then I can fight with, you know, the powers that be in the state of Massachusetts rather than my boss all the time for how I think people should change. So it works out better.
Yeah. And I think that's great. Ultimately taking control into your hands and focusing on advocacy from what it sounds like. And so do you do that as part of your career and what you're passionate about is kind of advocate to the state, like you had mentioned?
Yeah, so we are contracted with the state to provide services. And being that we are, I am a very strong advocate for the individuals and policy reform and change in general. So a couple of the things that I feel really strongly about is covering ABA for individuals throughout their lifetime. In Massachusetts, a lot of people stop getting the service when they turn 22. And I just think that's doesn't make sense because, you know, autism doesn't just end when you're 22, as well as changing and trying to change the policies for adults with autism and sort of the services they get once they are adults.
And so how have you incorporated that important advocacy work into your own organization? Is it through the services or programs that you offer or anything you might specialize in that's different from what other organizations are doing?
Yeah, so I would say one of the things we do is we're always willing to help families with figuring out the system and seeing where we can help them with advocating to get more resources. That's something that we often do for free just because it's such a need and so many people don't know what they actually have allotted to them or what they can get. Another thing that we do a lot is that we're, you know, if there's a state house rally, we're there. If there's any sort of public opinion of things, we're putting in our public opinion, submitting our letters, all of that. So we also encourage our families to be involved in various organizations to help with advocating for themselves and give them those resources.
Absolutely. And I love that you provide that for free because it is a barrier that people have. It's kind of preventing them from getting the support and resources that that they deserve. And so I love that you're someone that they know that they can rely on and depend on to kind of help educate them and help them learn the ropes of what they need to know to educate for themselves and perhaps their children.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a big thing because I always say it's not like, anyone gives people, special needs parents a book and say, here you go. These are all the things that you should do or where you should find these things. So it's really helpful when even I can help people talk through, what they're going through and see what we can get them help with.
Absolutely. And so I know you briefly mentioned it at the start of the show what Built does, but could you talk more about specifically the services, programs, or support that you provide throughout the state?
Sure, yes. So we work all throughout the state of Massachusetts doing in-home and ABA services. The only places we're not currently in is Central Mass or Cape. But how we work is we've sort of organically grown over the past almost 5 years. So we also just opened a center in Woburn where we're doing small group classes and courses primarily for teens and adults with developmental disabilities. So this is where they can come if they don't have a day program or if they don't have things to do. We have peer groups. We always have lots of fun stuff going on. So today's volunteering club, tomorrow is they go out to a museum and then they're having a cooking class. And then Thursday they do the MBTA and then they're going to a trampoline park. So they
Oh my
definitely have
gosh, busy week.
super fun, busy week every week. They honestly all have a much better social life than I do.
It sounds like from what you shared that you probably have a lot of partnerships with other organizations or companies to help with these trips or make these opportunities happen. Is that right?
Yeah, so what we usually do is we reach out to various organizations and see. We always like to tell people that we're coming just so that they can be prepared. A lot of places are great and have sensory boxes or other sort of
Oh, awesome.
accommodations they can make for us when we come there. And so some of the places that we go, they actually let us, as a nonprofit, they let us come in for free or discounted tickets. And that's definitely super helpful because then we can reduce the cost for the families.
Absolutely. And that's exciting also that you have a center in Woburn. I'd love to hear more about what inspired the center and also what made you choose that location.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we chose Woburn because it's really sort of in the center of a lot of things. We find that it's pretty easy to get there from the North Shore. Metro West can get there. We've even had people coming from Dedham, Norwood area. So it's not too bad traffic-wise, which is pretty good that it's centrally located. And the vision behind this was really that a lot of day services for individuals, they fit a need, but not all individuals want this sort of fit where they come to a center every day and they're there from 8:30 to 4:30, and oftentimes it's one staff to seven individuals. So they do a lot of in-house activities, which again is fine for some people. They're very happy with that. But we found that a lot of individuals wanted to have sort of a program where maybe they don't have to stay all day. They don't have to do things they're not interested in, and they can really pick and choose their classes, almost like a small college. So a lot of our individuals, it's up to them if they want to stay for the day. If they don't want to stay, they don't have to come that day. They can have a staff come to their house and do their own thing. They don't have to come to the center at all if they don't want to. So it's really flexible on what they can do.
I love that. And it also sounds like that it's really catering to and meeting people's different comfort levels or what they want to focus on and ensuring that you're really meeting and accommodating their best interests, which is great.
Yeah, and that's what we really want to do. I always tell people that if they want a program where someone's just going to sit there all day, this is definitely not the program for them, because we are moving and grooving. Even our art class has a moving aspect to it. So we really try to make it engaging, try to have peer groups be appropriate for each other, and definitely get out in the community. Because one of the biggest things I find is important is having people with disabilities in all areas of the community.
Absolutely. And with all of the exciting plans that are coming up for the groups and everything that are happening, like, how do you come up with those ideas? And also, what's the planning process like? Because I can imagine that's a lot of work behind the scenes to pull all the details together and make sure it runs smoothly.
Yeah, so I'm very lucky that my degree is in curriculum design, because I love designing curriculums. Thankfully, I have a wonderful team of managers too that help me with calling different places and seeing if they'd be open to us coming. It's definitely a lot of work behind the scenes, just because it's a lot of coordinating, making sure that the times work for everybody, things like that. But in general, it's I really always tell all the staff we have that think about things that they would like to do, because if they like it, chances are there'll be an individual that likes it. So we'll try any sort of class once and just see how it goes. And sometimes we're really surprised at how it goes or how much people have liked it. One of the things that I'm looking for right now, for example, is like a sushi making class, because one of the individuals said, you know, I'd love to learn to make my own sushi. And I said, that is a great idea. I bet there's other people that would love that too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And like you mentioned too, with the cooking classes and everything, it's nice that the interests and passions and everything like that are really diverse, so that way people kind of have the opportunity to do many different things that they might feel interested in or might excite them.
Yeah. And that's what we really want, is for people to say like, oh, I'm so excited today, we're volunteering at this place, or, you know, I'm in life skills class today and we're learning about financial independence. This is really important to me. So definitely we want things to be engaging and actually reflective of the individual's lives.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned that right now you're currently not in the Cape or in Central Mass. Do you see BILT potentially expanding to be in those locations one day, or do you feel like you kind of honed in on where you are right now?
I definitely wouldn't say that it's out of the question, because how we've grown over the years is that we have families that come up in different areas of the state, and then we hire in that area and we supervise the staff and clinicians in that area. So it definitely isn't impossible. I mean, I think that the need for the services is just growing. So it might be in the future.
And with how busy you've been, I wouldn't be surprised if you just keep expanding.
Yeah, in 4.5 years, we've definitely expanded quite a bit. We've gone from 2 staff and 2 individuals to about 40 staff and 125 individuals.
That's amazing. And for our listeners who are tuning in, I first heard of Christina in a Facebook group that we're both in, Boston Businesswomen, definitely a handful of years ago. I feel like probably it was likely early on when you were starting BILT. And so just seeing the growth that you've had, I think, is remarkable. And so how have you been able to achieve that point, going from a very small number of staff and individuals that you're working with to now have these really great big numbers that you're really working with on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I would say the number one thing is that my fiance, Josh, gives a lot of time and patience and effort to build, which we wouldn't be able to do it without him. Because for many years, he was the person doing second interviews and did the website and did the marketing and sort of all of the stuff that I don't do well at, which was super helpful. Now, as we've continued to grow, we finally have some really good managers in place, Chelsea and Andrea. Both of them help with reaching out to families and doing things like scheduling, which helps me, because then I can focus on sort of the bigger picture of the company.
Yeah. And that was actually what I ask you next is, now that you've grown, like, how have you really stepped into that founder and CEO role to really take BILT to the next level?
Oh, well, I would say that the biggest thing that I had to learn was how to delegate and how to give other people tasks of things to do, because I do like being involved in everything, but I've realized that I can't be involved in everything. So, being able to delegate is really helpful. I think also being able to sort of trust the people that you're working with and trust that the training you've given them, that they're capable of doing their job. So I don't feel like I have to be sort of micromanaging or involved in everything. And it's been helpful for me to have more time, because then I can do things like search for grants and look at different avenues of who can we collaborate with, or where can we get the individuals in next, which is definitely really helpful to be focusing on.
Yeah. And speaking of grants, would you say is that where most of the support comes for Built, or do you also work with like individual donors in that aspect?
So we do have individual donors, which is great. This year for the center, we got some donations, which was definitely really helpful to have with all of the expenses for the center. We do write grants, but I would say that's something as an organization that we are trying to focus on and get better with. For years now, it has only been Josh and I doing grants. And so that can be kind of complicated, because when you have so many other things that you're doing, that kind of falls to the wayside. But we're definitely
Right.
focusing on that more. And one of our favorite people we work with is the Flutie Foundation, and
Oh,
they've been
nice.
wonderful giving us a grant to work with people that are low income or might not have resources, so we can provide free services to them. And they have also allowed us to do STEM classes for free for the community, which has been
Nice.
super awesome to be able to provide that support.
That's awesome. And in addition to the Flutie Foundation, what are other collaborations or partnerships you might have similar to that?
I would say a lot of them are sort of volunteer organizations that we partner with. So we work a lot with the Mystic Community Food Pantry, which is out of the YMCA in, I think it's Malden, maybe. But they are wonderful. They love our volunteers. Our volunteers love going there, and they also always get a little snack when they leave. So of course, it makes it even that much better. So that's a great one that we've been going to recently. And another awesome one is Windrush Farm in Topsfield. And so for them, they have a therapeutic horseback riding program, but then they allow for our individuals to come there and do various things. So last week they were helping with painting the fence and cleaning the horse's gear and all that sort of stuff that really makes them feel like they're giving back to their community.
Yeah, and absolutely too, learning critical life skills and giving them the opportunity to improve and just have so many awesome experiences in that sense.
Yeah, yep, for sure.
And so working with your fiance Josh, I'd love to hear what that's like. I've interviewed a few people who are in a business with their husband or wife, and I always like hearing the perspectives and just some tips they have for working with their spouse or partner.
Sure, yeah. So Josh actually has a full-time job. He's a robotics engineer. So he helps on the afternoons and sort of weekends, and definitely helps a lot almost every weekend. I would say that, I mean, we went through COVID running this business in a very small 800 square foot apartment. So
Oh my gosh.
we definitely don't have a problem sort of coexisting in the same place. And now that we have a house, it's funny, because even Josh's friend came over last week and was like, "Wow, you guys must get annoyed working with each other in this office." And we were like, "Oh no, you should have seen what we were working in all through COVID." So
Yeah.
we kind of switch off. I'd say the biggest thing is knowing when someone has a meeting or who needs to leave the room, or kind of
Yeah.
figuring out that aspect, who's letting the dogs out so somebody doesn't have to be bothered at work, things like that. So it just takes some coordinating.
Yeah, that's a smart idea. And with that, are you, I don't want to say particular, but I guess that's the best word to use, but kind of like particular about like when's the time to talk about work and when's the time to just kind of be a couple? Or do you kind of keep things almost open-ended where they're so intertwined that it just is okay for your relationship and for Built to then kind of have that open feedback and always thinking of new ideas?
So we, I mean, I would say it's very intertwined, but we also have a boundary where sometimes we're both just not in the mood to talk about builds. So it could go either way where we're at dinner and Josh might say, like, okay, I don't want to talk about builds anymore. And I'm like, okay, I get it. And there'll be times where he's like, oh, I'm working on this budget and I'm watching like 90 Day Fiance or something. And he's like, oh, can you come in and look at this? And I'm like, I cannot think about builds or budgets right now. So we're just very good at saying, like, right now is not the time. And trying to set up a time where like we're both comfortable with it.
I think that's awesome. And personally, I feel like my best ideas come when I'm not actively thinking about work. Like when I'm purposely doing something like watching TV or reading or relaxing, that's when always the best ideas and tactics come out. So I imagine that's probably the same for you as well.
Yeah, every time we go on vacation, we have a lot of ideas that come up as we're out doing things. So I'm always writing like notes to myself of when I come back, of what, things that I'm thinking about.
I love that. And so, being able to hear about all of the amazing things that you've been doing with the individuals that you work with, I'd love to hear kind of like concrete examples of how you've been able to provide such a positive impact in the communities that you serve.
Yeah, sure. So one of our individuals, she is one of our greatest successes, and she is someone that during COVID, she lost all of her programming, so her day
Yeah.
program. She sat at home for basically 3 years with no services at all because there wasn't any services around. And we have been working with her for 7 months, and in 7 months she's now exercising. She's, taking care of herself hygiene wise. She's going out with staff to do bowling. She's volunteered at a cat shelter. And now her family says that, every morning she wakes up and she's sitting by the door ready to go for whoever's coming to pick her up. So she's someone that really has benefited immensely from the services. We have somebody else who they are really adamant that they want to live alone. And so for them, we've been able to do a lot of independent living training to the point where now they did their first overnight in their house alone, and their parents went out for the night and stayed somewhere. And this was a huge success from someone that was actually afraid to be alone 3 years ago, but wanted to have this goal. So it was really great to be able to support them in that.
That's amazing. And with the first individual that you had just shared, you had mentioned COVID and unfortunately having them be at home for just 3 years. Through the pandemic, did you see almost like an increase or an uptick for people who are looking for built services because of just the difficulties that the whole world was going through during that time?
Yeah, so it was when COVID hit, we took off, I think it was 2 weeks to sort of readjust and figure out what we were going to do going forward. And we decided we would work through COVID. We just put in some increased safety guidelines in place because as essential workers, people still need services. And so we definitely saw an increase of sort of daytime services that were needed. We filled the role a lot of times of helping with virtual school or things like that, because a lot of the times what we were finding was that the individuals could not access their education through Zoom. Either maybe they couldn't sit down, or maybe they didn't have the resources in their home, like a computer or Wi-Fi, to even access the curriculum. So thankfully, we have a lot of teachers on staff that work with us, and they were able to sort of help families during that time.
That's perfect. And so, shifting gears a little bit to talk more about you and all that you do as a nonprofit leader, could you talk more about what the process was like with just starting a nonprofit and how you kind of navigated all of the ins and outs that come with it?
Yeah, sure. So it's been very much a learning process. It's not as easy as I think people think. I would say that the biggest thing about a nonprofit is that you need to have a mission. So I have a lot of people that will reach out to me and say, they think they want a nonprofit because they want to get grants. And when that's what I hear, I'm always like, well, if that's your main purpose, you need that should not should be what you're focused on. You should be focusing on what is your mission? Why is it a mission? How are you looking to change something? And you definitely have to be passionate about it. So if your whole intent is to just sort of make money, that's an LLC. That's not a nonprofit for sure. So you definitely need a mission, as well as you need to have a board of directors. That is not easy as it sounds either, because people want to join a board, but whether they'll actually help or do anything on the board they're on is sort of the question. So that's something that we're still figuring out 4.5 years in, is how do you get, stellar board members that want to donate their time and donate their time consistently. And I think that's just a problem across the board of finding those people that really want to be engaged with your mission.
Yeah, and I think that's critical. Like you mentioned, just finding people who can really support you, not always like monetarily, but also with just time and their expertise. And so, with the board that you have now, what was your process like of finding those members and pulling it together?
Sure. Well, some of them are parents of the individuals that we serve. Some of them have been people that I found through networking sites like Boston Businesswoman. Josh, of course, is the treasurer and the assistant clerk on there. So it's really been an effort to reach out on LinkedIn to people, ask our current board members to help with finding new board members. And we have a couple, people will apply for a job and we'll say, like, hey, maybe, it looks like maybe you don't have a lot of time for a direct service, but it looks like you have a whole bunch of knowledge. Would this be something that you're interested in instead?
I think that's a great idea for people who apply for positions, kind of giving them another opportunity to become a board member instead.
Yeah, so it's definitely, it can be challenging, but I'm thankful that we have some good board members right now, and then we're getting a couple more inquiries, which is great.
Oh, that's exciting. And in addition to the process of starting a nonprofit, what are some things that you've learned along the way in the past almost 5 years that you've had built?
I think some of the things that I've learned is that fundraising is very hard. Fundraising is, a cornerstone of sort of a nonprofit, and that's something where I personally struggle with a little bit because I don't like asking people for money, and it feels very awkward and uncomfortable for me. So I've definitely had to get better with that and better with sort of speaking about our needs and, looking at it as like, this is, we're kind of selling what we're doing in our vision, and there's nothing wrong with that if people want to support that. So that's one thing I've learned. I mean, in general, I've also learned just about the nonprofit reporting, sending in their, the report once a year, which, at first I didn't really know about, and things like that. Also, I've gotten an accountant that's helping. That's an amazing thing because nonprofit accounting and tax recording is much different than an LLC.
That's good to know. And it's so true about the fundraising piece. I've chatted with a few other nonprofit leaders on this podcast, and that's one thing that they always say as well is just getting used to asking people for money and reminding themselves that selling is serving. And so, for any of our listeners who might be in a similar situation as you, where they're thinking about starting a nonprofit, what advice do you have for them with just getting more comfortable with the idea of fundraising and any tips you found to be helpful?
I would say that start off small. Like our first year, we decided, despite not having any, background or history of having a 5K, that we were going to throw a 5K. And we essentially broke even, but we also learned a lot that first year that we are not trying to throw a 5K every year. We now join, Flutie has a 5K every year. And so we join as a team to raise money. So, I think starting small and having small attainable fundraisers that are not taking up so much time and resources from your actual services or your mission, is definitely the way to go. Because if I could go back in time, I don't know if I would have done that whole 5K the first year, but it was very interesting to learn about like getting vendors and liability insurance for the place and
Yeah.
sort of all that, but it's definitely nothing I want to do again.
Great points. And also, too, one thing that I had learned about you when we had previously connected a few months ago is that you also like to support other nonprofit leaders just by speaking about different topics about nonprofits or helping to educate them and things like that. So I'd love to hear more about how you incorporate that into what you do and how you've been able to live it out throughout the past almost 5 years.
Yeah, so it's really in the with the developmental disabilities community, it's a very small community and there's a lot of nonprofits. So oftentimes a lot of us know each other. We're on the same councils, we're on the same phone calls. And so it's really helpful to have certain other nonprofit leaders or founders where I consider them, hey, I'm having, this really difficult issue with the state. I feel like I'm getting nowhere. Is this like me or is this, are you experiencing this? To sort of talk about, okay, we both have this problem. How do we go at this together? Because it's affecting us both. And I think when you start looking at other nonprofits, not as the competition, but just that there's plenty of people to serve and we're all doing it a slightly different way, but that we can all help each other and make serious change, that's way more important than thinking about like this person might be my competition, because the truth is that person they're serving might not ever be a client of mine, and that's okay. And my clients might never be a client of theirs, and that's okay.
Yes, and I can imagine that you've probably built partnerships with other nonprofits who can serve the Central Mass and Cape Cod area, since that's places that Bilt currently isn't serving.
Yeah, we do that a lot. Or even I might have someone call me up and say, like, hey, my program has one staff to four individual ratio, and this individual is great, but they can't do a 1-to-4 ratio. Can we refer them to you? Which I'll say, sure, because we do 1-to-1 ratios. So, we might have a more intensive, care that the individual might need. Or I might say, like, hey, this individual came and did not find, any of our stuff engaging. Like they felt that they weren't a part of our group or a good fit. So I'm going to send them your way because I know you have some slightly different groups that maybe they'll be a part of. So it's really about referring to who you think is going to be appropriate for that individual. Because I always say we're not the end all tell all for everyone. There's going to be people that maybe we're not the best fit for, and that's okay. Maybe they'll have a better fit somewhere else.
Great perspective. And as we get towards the end of this recording, one of my favorite questions that I like to ask our guest that comes on the show is, what would you say your favorite local businesses are to support?
Sure. So I've been thinking about this, and I have one place in particular that we used to be based in Waltham, and one place that I love is Pisano's in Waltham. It is a Mexican and Guatemalan food restaurant,
Oh,
but
yum.
they actually have the best cheeseburger in all of Waltham.
Oh,
Best cheeseburgers ever. So that's one that I have to say. And another one I recently tried is the Fox Den in Woburn, which has pierogies. I love a good pierogi, and I was very impressed with their pierogi selection. So I have to say, I will be back there.
I actually haven't even heard of pierogies before, so now I'm intrigued.
It's like a Polish dumpling. So
Oh.
it's amazing. They have a three different sampler you can try. It's really good.
Oh my gosh, sounds delicious. Christina, this has been such an awesome episode, and I've really appreciated having the opportunity to have you come on and share more about yourself and what Bilt does. And I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Sure. So we're on social media on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find us at Bilt Inc. BILTNE. Sorry, Facebook and Instagram are just BILTINC, Bilt Inc. And then, other than that, if people want to reach out by email, they can reach out to us at info@BILTNE.org.
Perfect. And I will link to those in the show notes. That way our listeners can click through and connect with you from there. But thank you so much again for coming on the show.
Sure, yeah, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.